Friday morning. Convening the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services. And as I said, it's Friday, thank goodness. And hopefully we're getting... Are we working the weekend?
Yep.
I believe we're working the weekend.
That's right.
We better be.
although, you know, he says we better be. I've got to figure out some way. I have a brother and sister-in-law who flew in from Los Angeles for a family reunion this weekend. And so I'm going to have to see how I juggle all of this. But was it last session before last? I missed my grandson's graduation for U of O. So, I mean, this is getting to be quite family problematic.
Well, my family reunion just ended today, and I didn't go.
You didn't go either.
I didn't go, so let's get this thing done.
We're having a work session today on House Bill 2511, and I know that Reverend Scott is here. I talked to him earlier this morning. Reverend T. Smith is having some medical testing done this morning, and so she will not be with us. And I know that Senator Morris is here, so we should have enough members here to have a quorum. With that, Mr. Britton, if you will proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, we're considering House Bill 2511, the A-20 amendment, and my plan this morning is to walk you briefly through the AE20 amendment. I know that we have others here who can help me out if need be. On page 1, starting with section 1, you'll see the services with respect to the Oregon Health Plan laid out. Really starts on line 13 with services required by federal law to be included in the state's medical assistance program. These, throughout the session, have been termed mandatory services. That is, we must provide them for certain groups of people if we are to get $1 of Medicaid funds. So that's the reference on lines 13 through 15. Then a number of other services, physician services, then down on line 20, prescription drugs, lab x-ray, medical supplies, and so on. And the purpose of this section is to lay out the services because you'll see in a moment that this bill defines which populations must receive certain kinds of services and the populations that are eligible for other kinds of services. We'll go through that in a moment. Section 3 defines those populations. The first population defined is persons who are categorically needy as described in ORS 414.025. We've termed these people categorically eligible. That is, they are eligible for other social services programs such as TANF or foster care. The second group is pregnant women with incomes no more than 185% of the federal poverty guidelines. The third group on line 20, persons under 19 years of age with incomes no more than 200% of the federal poverty guidelines. These are clearly children, and also children who are eligible for our children's health insurance program. So this population is funded with both Medicaid and CHIP funds, as well as general fund. On line 22, persons described in section 11 of this 2003 act, as you'll see, section 11 describes the medically or a medically needy program, and we'll look at those eligibility requirements when we get to section 11. Line 23, persons 19 years of age or older with incomes no more than 100% of the federal poverty guidelines who do not have federal Medicare coverage. This population is termed the standard population. Section 4 begins to align the populations that are in Section 3 with the services that were in Section 1. The first part of Section 4 talks about or discusses the services that these different populations are eligible to receive. And later in the section, in Section 4, the section just talks about those services that they must, at a minimum, receive. So this codifies those services and those populations and what they must receive, what they may receive. So, for example, if you look on line 27, persons who are categorically needy, as described in ORS 414, and persons under 19 years of age and pregnant women who are eligible to receive health services under Section 3 are eligible to receive all the health services approved and funded by the Legislative Assembly. That same group looks like, let's see, down in, I'm trying to find on page 3, line 7. Line 7 describes that same population, but they must be provided at a minimum, on line 10, the health services described in ORS 414-705A to G. So if you flip back to page 1, A through G are all those services required by federal law. So again, mandatory services for the categorically eligible: physician services, prescription drugs, lab x-ray, medical supplies, mental health services, and chemical dependency services.
John might want to point out to members who have not been a part of both the House and the Senate work group that worked on this particular piece of legislation, that categorical population is mandated by federal government, and we must do those in order to get the Medicaid funds into Oregon. It's not, we have no option on those when dealing with those particular issues.
Madam Chair, absolutely right.
Madam Chair?
Representative Bates.
A quick comment also. If my memory serves me right, strangely enough, prescription drugs are not a mandatory part of the Medicaid population, so benefits, but you can't run a program without them.
Right. And
so that's why they're included here in a specific manner and codified.
Correct. And, of course, they nationally, and I know that the President is waiting on the Senate back there, because they are working on this particular issue in Congress of trying to have prescription drugs available. So, but you're correct that under the current categorical requirements, prescription drugs are not included. However, if we did not include them, I think we would be the only state in the United States that did not provide prescription coverage to the categorical population.
And, Madam Chair, each population is treated in the same way in Section 4. That is to say, it describes, again, the services for which these populations are eligible to receive and those that they must receive. You see on page 3, persons 19 years of age and older who are eligible to receive health services under Section 3, this, again, is the standard population, must be provided at a minimum health services described in B through H. B is the physician services, prescription drugs, laboratory and x-ray, medical supplies, mental health services, chemical dependency services, and on page 2, emergency dental services. So that's what the standard population under this act must be provided. I'll continue now on Section 4A at the bottom of page 3.
Quick question before we move on.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. I wasn't a participant in any of this work prior to today, so just a quick 101 question. Folks under the age of 19 are not eligible for emergency dental?
Madam Chair.
And I don't want to open a can of worms. I'm just...
And Representative Smith, they are eligible for the whole dental. In fact, they must receive a full dental benefit.
Thank you.
One of the other 101 that I might explain is that we went to 200% of poverty level because for children under CHIP, we get a 72-28% match. We pay 28 and the federal government pays 72. And there have been some of the states that have gone to where they're covering more children. It's interesting that when children are being treated or having medical coverage, their parents then become a lot more engaged in looking at their own health needs and providing for their health needs. It's kind of an interesting phenomena. Once you get the kids, and I think that's a part of being parents, that we take care of our kids, and then we say, oh, you know, maybe I better do a better job of preventing some of the things that I'm doing that are wrong. So I think it was Vermont that you found that occurred. I think they went up to 300% poverty for kids.
Thank you.
At the bottom of page 3, section 4A says, if insufficient resources are available during a biennium, the population of eligible persons receiving health services may not be reduced. This is a prohibition against reducing populations in the event of budget crises. Below the population of eligible persons approved and funded in the legislatively adopted budget for the Department of Human Services. Now, it does say on line 4, on page 4, that the Department of Human Services may periodically limit enrollment of persons described in Section 11. This is the medically needy program. So to stay within their budget, the department does have the discretion to periodically limit enrollment. Section 4B has been termed by those of us who've been working on this bill a triggering mechanism, and that says if House Bill 2152 does not become law, for example, if it were referred to voters and did not pass, the 4A, Section 4A, is changed. And it would read down on line 9 and 10 and following, if insufficient resources are available during a biennium, the population of eligible persons receiving health services may be reduced. So if House Bill 2152 is referred and the referral is not approved by voters, then populations can be reduced, given this triggering mechanism in Section 4B. Section 6 says that the act becomes operative the day after the date the Department of Human Services is notified by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services that their request for a waiver has been approved, and requires the Director of Human Services to notify the Legislative Council upon receipt of the approval or disapproval of the request. Section 7 allows for the Director of Human Services, before the operative date, to begin getting things ready to implement this particular act. Section 8 on page 5 says that the current program will continue until this date becomes until this measure becomes effective through the CMS approval of waivers. I'm going to skip.
Mr. Britton, you may want to point out the significance of where we are prior to the approval from CMS, because there's some budgetary considerations. The longer we do not have this approved by CMS, the more that it actually is costing the state.
Madam Chair, absolutely. Our budget in House Bill 5030 for the Oregon Health Plan is predicated on the notion that the waivers will be approved and the program implemented by the 1st of January 2004. And as Chair Winters pointed out, if the current program continues, I believe it's almost $1 million a month more in terms of general fund cost. So we're hopeful that CMS and the department can work this out expeditiously. On page 7, section 11 describes those persons who are eligible for the medically needy program. The old medically needy program was eliminated in our budget cuts. This reestablishes a medically needy program, and in fact $18 million of general fund is in the House Bill 5030 budget for this program. It defines the medically needy program, or those eligible for it, 65 years of age or older, can be blind or disabled under certain statutes, has a gross annual income that does not exceed the standard established by the Department of Human Services, is not covered under any public or private prescription drug benefit program. A person receiving prescription drugs under Section 4 of this Act shall pay up to a percentage of the Medicaid price of the prescription drug established by the department by rule and the dispensing fee. So this Section 11 gives a significant amount of discretion to the department to design this program so that it stays within the budget boundaries that are established.
Quick question.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. In Section 11, Item C is not covered under any public or private prescription drug benefit program. What about, and again, this is a 101 question, what about folks who are otherwise eligible for private prescription drug benefit programs but choose not to participate in those? Was there any discussion on that?
There was.
Representative Gates.
The department's going to work very diligently that if there's a prescription drug benefit available for these individuals through either a pharmaceutical company, in which they have some excellent programs, or other private, some nonprofits and some charitable organizations have this also, that will be the first consideration. They have to go there first. We're not going to put general fund money up for that kind of a situation. This program is very complex, and that's why we gave wide latitude here. Some people are making $700-$800 a month, and will have drug bills of $2,000 or $3,000 a month. And we have to work out a program that allows us to gather some of the income they have, a small amount, to help subsidize what we're doing here. But we've set aside $18 million for this program so that we won't have a recurrence of what happened last winter. And we want to set it up the way through administrative rule that we can be flexible. And we can move that in a way we get the most value of the $18 million we can and prevent the kind of problems we've had in the stories we've seen.
Sounds very good.
So I think we've got this thing worked out, and we gave them broad language for that very reason.
Thank you.
Just to add on to that, Representative Smith, we've done several components when you look at prescription drugs. The other day we passed out 875, which was for 54 and older. This one, of course, is designed to target the medically needy, but also we went this route because you recall last session we passed the prescription drug program for seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And it was our thought that rather than to create something new to give the agency the flexibility to add that to the already existing what we're trying to do. I think with the three different approaches, hopefully we'll be able to do several things. One, to be certain that we're not having individuals like what we've seen when we had to cut the medically needy program, to provide assistance, pharmaceutical assistance, because an analysis of those individuals was that the biggest problem was the pharmaceutical cost. And then secondly, to address the issue, the broader issue that we have with not only this group but others in the state of Oregon, where the cost of prescription drugs is such that there is a mechanism to provide bulk purchasing, which then produces a lower rate, if you will. So all of these are kind of tying together for an overall comprehensive program. That makes sense.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, I'll skip over to Section 16 on page 10. This is the same section as Section 12 in House Bill 3624, the B-44 amendments that we'll be considering in a moment. Section 16 essentially sets up a way that, or a price, a strike price for a contract between hospitals and fully capitated health plans in the event that they don't have a contract with each other. This is the payment price. And you can see on line 15, for example, for inpatient hospital services based on the capitation rates developed for the budget period at the level of the statewide average unit cost multiplied by the geographic factor, the payment discount factor, and an adjustment factor of 0.925. And with that, I will turn it back to you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Porter.
I would just like to, even though this process is not over, I'd just like to say thanks to John Britton, who has worked so very hard with all of us, asking so many questions, changing all the different amendments that all of us, including the lobbyists and all of us as members, have asked, and his patience has never shown short at all. So even before we start talking about this, I'd like to give kudos to John.
I want to add to that.
Well, there's a lot of individuals that we need to thank for these next two pieces, this legislation and the next one. Holly, who's in the back seat, I think we probably, when we look at for the audience, there were two pieces of legislation on this. It was House Bill 2511 and Senate Bill 540. And if you're having to do the legal work for both and having to bring the two together, our legal counsel has done an outstanding job because there was constant, we're doing -20 amendments today. And so the amendments were, when she produced one for 2511, she also produced it for Senate Bill 540, so that we were going down a parallel track. In addition, I would like, the staff that I work with this session is wonderful, but also I want to say a thank you to the agency. To Bruce Goldberg and Lynn Reed, the providers. This has not been an easy task. You know, taking over seven and Representative Bates, Representative Westland, and Representative Cruz, and working to try to craft and to restructure the Oregon Health Plan has been a tremendous undertaking in this building. And there are so many players who have assisted in doing this. Sometimes I think we're probably frustrated and pulling out our hair. It's been 7.5 months. You know, we have, I've learned some new acronyms. I didn't get paid for all of them, you guys, so I'm telling you. I'm still sending the message out there. But, you know, between the F-chips and this chips and the FEOPs and what have you, it's coming together to try to do the best job possible for the citizens of the state of Oregon. And I just have to say that there were just so many players that assisted in getting this where we are today, that I thank all of you. We couldn't have done it without you. We certainly couldn't have done it without the lobbies get a bad rap, and you were at the table from the beginning, and thank you. The citizens advocates who are here, thank you. But I think that all of us had the best interest of the Oregonians at heart. And even sometimes when we thought we weren't going to get there, today we're ready to move and to move this to full ways and means. So I just have to say that. And Representative Weston, wherever you are, Representative Cruz, wherever you are, thank you. Mm-hmm. And, I'd be remiss. Senator Courtney, thank you for co-chairing with me. So with that, if I can get a motion.
I'm hearing you, sir, my friend. I'd like to move the dash.
Can I make a comment there?
Yes. Representative Bates.
I'm not going to say much more than what's been said already. The people in this room know what went on in January, February, and March with meetings that went on for 12 to 14 hours a day in the Audit Committee and the work the Senate did after that. This bill really defines a population and a benefit package for OHP standard and for OHP patients that's going to work. We're not going to trap the e-board again in situations where it is forced to deal in difficult situations if we run into revenue problems. We have built a safety valve into this bill to allow the department to make rational decisions about trimming the population if caseload becomes a problem or we have financial problems again. It's something that's gone through multiple iterations. The next bill up, I was always hoping would hit B-52 because I like that number. We didn't quite make it. But having said all that, this is the work of numerous people, as you've wisely pointed out. And for those people who were with us back, as I said, in the dark days of the winter, we're sitting upstairs at 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night, your efforts were not in vain. I think of people like Bill Young out there and others who sat through those long, hard meetings and gave up time for their families, their jobs to do this, and I really appreciate the record.
But you know what? I'm sure glad we don't have any more pizza. You have to know that most of those evening meetings was
pizza and warm Pepsis. It was tough.
So anyway, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. I want you to know how much rural Oregon appreciate your commitment to this. As I go through this bill, I think this is a bill that was able to set partisan politics aside and look out for the best interest of Oregonians. And I feel like rural Eastern Oregon is going to be served as well as we can be in this environment. And I think Dr. Bates, you have done a fabulous job.
Thank you.
John, you've done a fabulous job. When we first came in here, this is my first time on Human Services, and let me tell you, there's a lot of 101 that goes on, and I think the three of you have done a fabulous job in keeping some of us who need to get up to speed, helping us get the information we need. So thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome. Madam Chair.
Senator Carter.
I move the -820 amendments to House Bill 2511.
Senator Carter moves the -820 amendments to House Bill 2511. Is there any objection?
Madam Chair. I move House Bill 2511 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Carter moves House Bill 2511 as amended to the full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? Thank you.
Is it one of the five carriers?
Yes.
No, Chair, carriers on this thing.
I don't mind that.
No.
Okay, to full? How about for House?
That's right.
Thank you. Just when I get on the floor and they get separate yes. questions, I may not say thank you.
Okay. We'll now open work session on House Bill 3624.
The B-40. No, I don't. This is the famous 44s, right?
Thank you.
Oh, wonderful. Are we having our own confab over there in the corner trying to get copies of the...
What'd you say, Mike? We're so close. All I want to do is go home. So.
Exactly.
Have to be the abnormal score. You can tell I wasn't a singer. I was
greatly
high.
Wasn't you?
Oh, God.
I'm still breathing
out.
Remarkable.
Yes. House Bill 3624. Just a little overview, and of course most of you in the audience know, but perhaps those who are looking at us on a tape do not know. This is the bill that started in the House and was started out of the Wesson's Committee, the Audit Committee. the one that Representative Bates referred to earlier, where there were all the evening meetings and late night with all the providers and stakeholders, which provide the framework that then led us to House Bill 2511. And this has been months and months of discussion and negotiations to come to where we are today. And you can tell by on this one, it had a lot more amendments than the previous one. The previous one had dash 20s. This one has B44. So that's pretty, and thank you, Holly, for your patience and your indulgence, and I'm sure all the notes that you've received from all of us. In trying to decipher which one of the legislators sent you the note to make the changes. And again, a thank you to all the participants who have been involved when I consider two pieces of landmark legislation on behalf of the citizens of the state of Oregon. So with that, John, would you walk us through House Bill 3624?
Madam Chair, my plan was not to walk you all the way through it. We did that the other day, but I'll point out
because we had a couple of changes sure. that were in there. Thank you.
First of all, on page 7, section 7, I want to point out that section 7 was amended to reflect completely or identically Section 1 in the bill that we just referred to the full committee, 2511. And it should be identical. That is, that the services that are listed in 2511 are also listed here in 3624.
It's just the one where the conceptual amendments for the ambulance.
Well, I'll get to that. Madam Chair, on line 27, Holly was able to go ahead and make that change so we don't have to conceptually amend this bill whatsoever. And that includes within, on line 27, it includes ambulance services.
I have to point out, even after 42 amendments and changes, we discovered that a very critical piece had not been included, and that was ambulance services. So that was the... had we not, yesterday we would have had to conceptually add that, but because we're doing it today, so it's in. Thank you.
And I might add, Madam Chair, that ambulance services are funded in the 5030 House bill budget for the Department of Human Services. The other change I would point out, this is not a change to an earlier amendment that we reviewed, but it is in section 24 on the very last page. There is an appropriation of general fund for $275,000 for the Office of Oregon Health Policy and Research for the purpose of the Health Services Commission carrying out the provisions of section 9, which is the hiring of an independent actuary to set some benchmarks for managed care and fee-for-service rates.
Where did Senator Carter go?
Can we make a couple comments?
Representative Bates.
Thank you. Madam Chair, thank you. I want to put on record that we had one thorny problem left unresolved with the institutional pharmacies. And Mr. Cosgrove and Lynn Reed have gotten together, and we have come to an agreement how to deal with that over the interim.
Lynn, would you come forward so that we can get it on the record of the agreement that has been reached with respect to the institutional pharmacist issue?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lynn Reed, Administrator of the Office of Medical Assistance Programs in the Department of Human Services, using no acronyms.
Ramsey isn't here now. So
that's true. And Mr. Cosgrove and I did discuss two issues related to institutional pharmacies. One is related to Section 13 of the bill, which establishes a process for procuring a pharmacy benefits manager for the program. And then there is a following section, I don't have the bill right with me, that talks about including the fully capitated health plans in development of a request for proposals for that pharmacy benefits manager. And what Mr. Cosgrove and I agreed was that we would also make sure to include representatives from the institutional pharmacy industry in the development of that RFP, sorry, request for proposal. And I just want to also say that we'd be sure to include representatives from the Oregon State Pharmacists Association as well.
I just want to input in that representation will include a member from a rural pharmacy.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, we'll be glad to make sure that we include a rural pharmacy representation as well.
Thank you.
That's an excellent suggestion.
Thank you.
The other issue that we agreed to address is there is a budget note associated with House Bill 5030 that describes a committee that will be set up to look at the issue of, in the institutional setting, those drugs that have been sent out to the institution but then are not used for one reason or another. They're individually packaged. And in certain circumstances, they could be used again. They could be returned to the pharmacy and be dispensed once again if they meet certain safety standards. And so this committee will include the Oregon State Board of Pharmacy and other appropriate parties in looking at that issue and determining what would be an appropriate circumstance under which that should occur. And in the meantime, we do have a definition in our administrative rules that indicates a pharmacy that's, I'm not quite sure what the right term is, but an institutional pharmacy as a shortcut, is required to take back those drugs today from institutions. And we are going to do a temporary rule and rescind that part of that rule while we work through this process under what circumstances it's appropriate to do that.
Madam Chair, I...
excuse me. Go ahead.
Senator Carter first.
I appreciate Lynn working this out because Tom Holthead and Paul Cosgrove had brought this to our attention early on with them self-managing their piece, and we had talked yesterday about this issue as well. So I'm glad to know that this has been resolved and can be done that way, and very glad to note that a rural pharmacist, because sometimes the mom and pops are left behind, and so I'm glad to know that that's a consideration to be done as well.
Thank you.
And thank you, Representative Bates, for working with them last night to get this issue resolved. And my apologies if there weren't sufficient copies of the amendments in the back.
Madam Chair, we'll make them available down at LFO after the work session is over.
Thank you. But I do. I know that even though it's the lateness of the hour, we have continued to have little issues, and I'm certain that in the interim there will probably even be things that will come to our attention. Putting together a bill of this magnitude and a restructuring, there's, you know, sometimes things fall through the cracks. So just to know that we are ready to tweak and serve. So with that, I think Senator Carter.
Ms. Madam Chair. I move the -44 B amendments to House Bill 3624.
Senator Carter moves the -B 44 amendments to House Bill 3624. Are there any objections?
Madam Chair, I'm not objecting, but would it be the appropriate time? Let me know the appropriate time to make a comment on the bill.
I will.
Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, move House Bill 3624 to the full committee with the new fashion.
I need to be legal first.
Right.
Are there any objections?
None.
Hearing none, the -44B amendments have been adopted.
Madam Chair, move House Bill 3624 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Carter moves House Bill 3624 as amended to the full committee on Ways and Means with the due pass recommendation. Is there any objections? Reverend Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's hard for me to start here and to be able to thank all the people taking part in this. It's even more than we did in 2511. This is the result of a huge amount of work by lobbyists who often get a bad rap, who brought excellent information to us and helped us, from hospitals to F-chips to pharmacists. Almost everybody in the healthcare industry took part in producing this document. This document is nothing less than a revision of the Oregon Health Plan, the Medicaid program we know in the state. It will move us to having greater access for patients. It will make us more efficient. It will allow us to have more managed care on a very gradual and careful basis. There will probably be mistakes in this bill. You can't move an entire system of this magnitude without errors. And I appreciate that Lynn Reed and Mr. Cosgrove got together and tweaked something without having to have a law change to do it, because we need that kind of cooperation as this bill rolls out and becomes reality. We need all parties working together and as much as possible coming to agreements as this rolls out. I especially want to thank what we used to call the Three Amigos, which is Representative Cruz, now Senator Westland, who took a demotion and went to the Senate, and we lost him.
Watch it!
and myself, we became good friends during this process, despite some gaps in our political outlook on life. Some of those gaps still exist, but we can live with each other. And I just can't say enough about what a huge undertaking this has been and how helpful everyone has been. I can't even list all the people involved. And I don't want anyone to feel left out that we didn't say to you, thank you, thank you, thank you for all the hours, time away from your jobs, time away from your families, to come down here and sell them for 7.5 months to do this piece of work, which really is groundbreaking. I appreciate it deeply, and I know the Legislative Assembly does also. Thank you.
Thank you, amigos.
amigos. Like two left.
Well, you notice that the one amigo decided that he had to join the lady, the senorita, on the other side. who ultimately had to get all of you together to get this done.
Yes.
But I think we're all sighing a big sigh of relief, because this has been a huge undertaking for this body. And it has been 7.5 months of work. It has also been, some legislation that said we did not want to be again in the position that we found ourselves in when we had the budgetary shortfalls, and we had to try to solve some problems quickly. And we knew we weren't solving problems when we had read the headlines about no funding for the Medicaid media and some of those other issues. We also knew something else. We also knew that the continued escalating cost of the Oregon Health Plan, that we would not be able to continue to afford it if we did not do some retooling and we did not do some restructuring. And I do want to thank all of the participants, because for the citizens of the state of Oregon, you have stepped up to assist us in doing several things. One, to provide health coverage to the neediest in our society. And two, I hope that the F-chip piece of our program will get the push and the nudge that they also need, so that the small employer can provide medical insurance coverage for their employees. So there's a lot of pieces that are involved in this when we talk about health care. I cannot go away without saying once again one of my other things that I hopefully can happen in the interim and long range. Those of you who know me know that I have, since returning back to the state capitol, have said I believe that we need to work not only on the issue of the Oregon Health Plan, but we really need to get a think tank group of individuals and work on the health care delivery system in Oregon for all of its citizens. I have been very troubled that we have not done that in this state. We have not addressed some of the issues of the shortage of nurses and the shortage of doctors and the accessibilities in our rural communities and some other pieces that go along with a healthcare delivery system. You know, what's occurring when we talk about the process of going through certificate of needs? There's a lot of pieces that are involved in healthcare. And I just thoroughly believe, I've talked to the governor's office about, you know, maybe putting some people together to begin to work on that, as well as to work on our mental health system. I think these are opportunities that we cannot allow ourselves to pass by. I think our citizens deserve it, and I think that we have a responsibility to take that next step now and to look at the entire healthcare delivery system in the state of Oregon. So with that, I want to thank all of you, and we are adjourned.